For this last story, you would think that a people who misplace their empire, right, and are stuck on a nasty little island that is a cold, rainy paradise for sheep, you'd think that they might express a little humility every once in a while. Nope, not the English.
The English are moral, the English are good, and clever and modest and misunderstood. The English, the English, the English are best. I wouldn't give tuppence for all the rest. It's not that you're wicked or naturally bad. It's knowing you're foreign that's driving you mad.
Ah, yes, the late duo Flanders and Swann merely expressing what every English person believes in their heart. Author Bill Bryson knows very well that you can't write such songs about his native Iowa, but after 40 years of living in the land of green hedges and dog's bollocks, he still finds the place a twisted mystery. His latest volume, called The Road to Little Dribbling, is a guidebook to all the odd places that appear on maps of the UK and constitute a grand geography of weirdness. With the English psyche as his compass, he tracked from one end of the UK to the other. He never made it to Little Dribbling, but there's a good reason for that.
For quite a long time, this book was at least half written and had no title. And in a kind of desperation, I just started playing around with the road to this and that and, you know, the road to dementia and the road to permanent confusion. And for some reason, Little Dribbling both sounded somehow apt to the condition that I seemed to be advancing towards as I age, but also to it just seemed like a sort of quintessential English village name. So it's entirely made up, but it seemed to me appropriate that I should be searching for a place that doesn't really exist.
Also a meaning. I mean, Nether Wallop, where does that come from?
Well, there's a whole cluster of villages called the Wallops, and Nether Wallop is just one of them. What exactly Nether means in the context of it might mean upper or outermost, I suppose. But I'm also absolutely certain that the reason the British hold on to that name is not because of any historical attachments, because they just like to say, I live in Nether Wallop.
Is your impulse to go to the UK quite some time ago something to do with finding the most exotic place that still you could function in because you know the language?
Well, it was very easy to move here because of the language. But no, what happened with me was, I mean, this we're looking at the early 1970s. I was 20 years old, and I felt as if anything that was globally exciting was not in Iowa. It was everywhere else, and so I just wanted to go to Europe and see the bright lights and experience all of that. And I went over. I spent 4 months hitchhiking around. I had the most wonderful time. I found that it was something I really loved doing, just moving around and traveling from place to place. And at the end of the summer, entirely by chance, I stumbled into a job in a psychiatric hospital just outside London. And I took this job intending to stay for just a few months. And during the time I was there, I met a student nurse who is subsequently became and I'm pleased to say, still is my wife. So by meeting an English girl and marrying an English girl, I kind of married into the country. And that was more than 40 years ago. Hmm. And I'm still with them both. So I am very, very happy here. You know, I hate to give the impression that England completely drives me crazy. As with any culture, you know, any society, there are things about it that I find challenging. But by and large, I think it's still, you know, it is a really wonderful country. And part of what makes it wonderful is that it is so bewilderingly eccentric. It can be incredibly exasperating, but most of those things, I would hate it if they were, you know, if they were somehow removed. I would hate for all that eccentricity to be taken away.
Well, it sounds as though your beginning in a psychiatric hospital gives you a certain natural vigilance about those eccentricities that you've kept with you all this time.
Yeah, well, it has to be said. I mean, genuinely, it has to be said that Britain is probably the best place in the world. A psychiatric hospital is probably the best place in Britain to get to know the country because
in a good way, in a good way.
Because the patients at this hospital, I mean, it was a really, really delightful institution insofar as a psychiatric hospital can be called delightful. But the patients were mostly long term, and they were really mostly quite sweet and really quite nice to know. And I can honestly tell you that very often, if apart from the uniforms, you couldn't tell which were the patients and which were the staff.
There are some details in here that are really sobering. For instance, the history of the town of Grimsby, a port city, which in 1950 had one level of production, and today has quite another level of production.
Yeah. Grimsby is a really sad place, and I mean a salutary lesson about, you know, the seas are not inexhaustible. We have to, I mean, we are as a species, we are the most foolish organisms that we think, you know, we human beings think that we can just keep taking and taking and taking, because I can't remember offhand the figures I used, but I mean, in the 1950s, up through the 1950s, Grimsby was landing, you know, tens of thousands of tons of cod and ling and haddock and, you know, herring and all kind, and just name an edible fish. They were landing it in tens of thousands of tons, and now the figures are just, you know, 20 tons or 15 tons or, you know, I mean, virtually nothing. At one time, Grimsby was not just the biggest fishing port in Britain, it was the biggest fishing port in the world, and now, you know, 30 years later, it doesn't exist at all. And of course, this is an experience that, you know, has been repeated just as much of the Grand Banks in North America and lots of other places. So, yeah, it's a really unnerving example of how foolish we can be as humans can be.
Have you put your writerly footprints in every part of Britain down?
No, I mean, that is the most amazing thing about Britain, because, you know, it's physically, it's not very big. You know, Britain is about the size of Iowa and Minnesota put together. I mean, that's the whole of it, Wales, Scotland, England, all of it. So that doesn't physically take up a whole lot of space, but it is just infinite. I mean, there's so many places. And what I found was, as soon as I finished the book, turned it into the publisher, I kept living here, but I also kept moving around in Britain, and I'd find, you know, come to town, I think, I wish I'd, you know, I didn't get this in the book. I wish I had, you know, I wish I'd known about this place 6 weeks ago, because I could have got it in the book. And I'm still having that experience. You know, it's been some months now since I finished the book, and almost every time I leave the house, I find something new that I hadn't known before. And I'm presuming that that's going to be, however many years on earth are left to me, I will keep having that experience over and over again.
Well, I suspect they will be suitable chronicles for yet another book about Britain. This one was terrific. Bill Bryson, thank you so much.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Bill Bryson's latest book is The Road to Little Dribbling. And if you want to hear more adventures of Bill Bryson traveling that road to Little Dribbling, just listen to the Takeaway Weekender, which you get automatically by signing up for the Takeaway podcast.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.